Reading from Bridge of Birds, a novel of an ancient China that never was, by Barry Hugert. Chapter 19, Bamboo Dragonfly. I awoke to see Li Kao smiling down at me, and Miser Shen tilted a gourd filled with delicious spring water to my lips. It revived me as if by magic. Soon I was able to get up and examine the little oasis, which had clearly been used as a pleasure garden. Trees and shrubs from every corner of the empire had been planted there, and the variety was astonishing. Silver bells had once tinkled in the branches, and paper lanterns had glowed in the night like fireflies, and lovers had walked hand in hand through the mazes of moonflowers. Then the horrible eruption, and the hand that no one sees. I wondered what terrible crime the city had committed to deserve such a fate, but then I decided that I didn't want to know. I turned around and shuddered as I saw the marks of invisible fingers angrily pawing in the salt at the other end of the narrow bridge. The hand was waiting. A clear path led through wildflowers toward the bronze roof of a pagoda that sparkled in the light of the setting sun. We started toward it, and as we drew closer, we saw that the pagoda had escaped destruction because it was nearly solid stone. Only the wooden doors had rotted away. The sun sank below the horizon, but the moon had already lifted into the sky, and a pale path of moonbeams reached through the hole where the door had been and touched something that sparkled. Tears began to trickle down Miser Shen's cheeks as he stared at a pile of treasure that was even larger than the one at the castle of the labyrinth.
"Cured!" he cried joyfully. "I could not be sure before, but now when I look at this loot, my fingers itch only for the pearls and jade, and that is because I would like to give them to Lotus Cloud."
Li Kao's eyes met mine, and I nodded. Both of us had instinctively studied the top of the pile of treasure for a ghost shadow. There it was. I was getting rather good at it, and the shadow blanket lifted easily over my head. I was looking at the same ghost. No, not the same, but dressed in the same ancient fashion, and with the same streak of blood where a blade had pierced her heart. Again I sensed that she was making a terrible effort to appear before us, and I felt the same searing wave of agony when her lips parted.
"Take pity upon a faithless handmaiden," she whispered. "Is not 1,000 years enough?"
Ghost tears, like transparent pearls, trickled down her cheeks.
"I swear that I did not know what I had done," she sobbed. "Oh, take pity and exchange this for the feather. The birds must fly."
Then she was gone. Miser Shen had seen nothing, and he gazed in wonder at the stunned expressions on our faces. I snarled and scrambled up the pile, and slid back down with an identical jade casket in my hands. I jerked the lid open, and then I cried out in despair. Inside was not the heart of power, which was supposed to be the ultimate, but two more tiny tendrils. They were the arms of the great root, and if the legs had failed, what more could we expect from the arms? The ginseng aroma made my eyes water, and I turned the casket upside down. Something else fell to the floor. Li Kao got down on his knees and carefully examined a tiny crystal ball about the size of the miniature flute.
"Oh, Miser Shen, I would advise you to sit down and prepare for a rather unusual phenomenon," he said grimly.
Then he spat on his hand and reached out and cautiously rubbed the crystal surface. The ball began to glow with a strange inner light, Then it began to expand. It grew until it was several feet in diameter, and the inner light grew brighter and brighter, and then we all cried out in wonder as a picture appeared. And then we heard sounds. We were looking at the interior of a pretty little cottage where an old lady snoozed on a stool. We could hear her peaceful snores and the sounds of chickens and pigs and the gentle murmur of a stream. Birds sang and bees droned drowsily, and the sun-dappled leaves of a tree rustled outside the window. An ant scurried across the floor, carrying a tiny crust of bread. After a moment, a roach took notice and began to scuttle after the ant. A rat stuck its head from a hole and dashed after the roach. A cat bounded after the rat, and then a dog bounded through the door and raced after the cat. The whole procession charged beneath the old lady's stool and tipped it over, and she sat up and rubbed her eyes, unleashed a torrent of peasant profanity, grabbed a broom, and started in hot pursuit of the dog that was chasing the cat, that was chasing the rat, that was chasing the roach, that was chasing the ant, that was carrying the crust of bread. It's difficult to describe in words, but the scene that unfolded was incredibly comic. Around and around they went, racing through the door, climbing back inside through the window, smashing through the flimsy walls, reappearing through a hole in the roof, and reducing the furniture to splinters. The variations appeared to be endless, and they were so ingenious that Miser Shen and I held our sides as we howled with laughter. At one point, the old lady's slashing broom sent every piece of pottery flying into the air, and they all came together with a crash. The fragments fell to the floor, and as one piece landed upon the other, they formed a solemn statue of the sacred and venerable Sage of Serenity. The mad procession raced outside, splashed through a pond, and when they crashed back inside through another ruined wall, there was a huge bullfrog squatting upon the old lady's head, croaking indignantly. Miser Shen and I might have laughed ourselves to death if Li Kao hadn't reached out and touched the crystal ball. The glow faded, and the sounds and the picture vanished, and the ball shrunk down to its former size. "Oh, Shen, have you ever seen anything like this?" Master Li asked, as soon as Miser Shen had recovered enough to breathe. Miser Shen scratched his head and said, "Well, I can't be sure. Surely I have never seen anything like that incredible scene. But I once saw a tiny crystal ball that resembled this one in an ancient painting. It was in the Cavern of Bells. An old lame peddler, with his back to the viewer, was facing three young ladies who were dressed in the style of many centuries ago. In one of his hands he held three feathers." "Feathers!" Master Li yelped. "Girls dressed in the ancient style?"
Yes, said Miser Shen.
In the other hand, the peddler was holding a ball that resembled this one, and a tiny bell, and a miniature flute. Li Kao grunted in satisfaction and unsnapped one of the fake shells on his belt.
"Like this?"
"Precisely like that," said Miser Shen as he examined the tiny tin flute. "I don't remember much else about the painting except that it was said to be very mysterious and that the old lame peddler was thought to be divine. The Cavern of Bells has become a shrine in his honor, and it is tended by a small order of monks." Li Kao placed the flute back into the shell and added the crystal ball and the arms of the great Root of Power to his smuggler's belt.
"Let's get some sleep. In the morning we'll find out how to get off this island, and our first stop will be the Cavern of Bells," he said.
He spoke too soon. When we made a circuit of the oasis the following morning, we discovered that it was indeed an island completely encircled by murderous lava, and the narrow bridge was the only exit. Fingerprints pawed in the salt, and my heart sank to my toes as I realized that we would never be able to get back to the children of Khufu. I could not stop the tears that welled in my eyes and trickled down my cheeks, and Miser Shen looked at me and then hastily averted his eyes.
Number 10 Ox, this is not such a bad place in which to spend the rest of our days, he said shyly. We shall live like kings, on fruits and berries and pure spring water, while the rest of the world enjoys war, famine, and pestilence.
And death, I thought. I heard weeping and mournful bells, and I saw a long row of small coffins disappearing into the ground.
Of course, the rest of the world will also be enjoying Lotus Cloud,
Miser Shen said thoughtfully.
You have a point, I sniffled.
We were sitting upon the grass with our backs against the trunk of a huge palm tree. Li Kao trotted up and joined us, and I saw that his eyes were sparkling.
Gentlemen, how much do you know about the great Chang Heng? He asked.
I dimly recalled schoolroom lessons.
Didn't he invent the seismograph about 500 years ago?
And the fire drug, said Miser Shen.
He did indeed, and his achievements did not stop there, said Master Li. The great Chang Heng was a superb poet, a competent painter, an engineer and astronomer without equal, and the world's greatest student of the phenomenon of flight. He perfected the science of latitude and longitude, determined the value of pi, revolutionized the armillary sphere, and constructed kites that could carry men through the air for long distances. One day he happened to be sitting as we are, with his back against a tree, and something brushed his face.
Li Kao lifted his right hand and opened it, displaying a tiny object.
A sycamore seed? Said Miser Shen.
Precisely, said Master Li. Chang Heng had seen thousands of them, but never before had he thought to examine one closely. The more he studied it, the more convinced he became that he was gazing at one of the marvels of nature.
Miser Shen and I stared fixedly at the seed. It was nothing but a tiny stem and a circle of fan-shaped blades.
Observe, said Master Li.
He blew gently into the palm of his hand. The fan-shaped blades began to revolve faster and faster. Then the seed lifted straight up into the air. The breeze caught it, and away it went, spinning into the sky, sailing over the treetops, dwindling to a tiny speck in the distance.
Chang Heng was gazing at one of the most efficient flying machines in the world, and he immediately began to build a sycamore seed that would carry a man, said Master Li.
The emperor graciously provided pilots from the ranks of criminals who had been sentenced to death, and one after another, the wailing wretches were strapped into Chang Heng's flying machines and pushed off the top of the cliffs. One of them encountered a strong updraft and actually flew for several hundred feet, but the end result was the same. The blades could not whirl fast enough to compensate for the weight, and the pilots all crashed to their deaths.
Do you know what Chang Heng did then?
We are as ignorant as apples, sighed Miser Shen, speaking for both of us. The great Chang Heng mixed sulfur, saltpeter, and charcoal and invented the fire drug, Master Li said. We use it mostly for fireworks, but he had something else in mind. By adding resin, he managed to produce a compound that would burn steadily instead of exploding, and he packed it into long tubes of bamboo. He built a wicker carriage and attached it to a revolving pole. On top of the pole, he placed fan-shaped blades, and at the bottom he added a wheel to which he attached his tubes of fire drug. The emperor and all the top officials gathered to watch what promised to be a spectacular execution.
and the weeping convict was strapped to the seat in the carriage. Chang Heng lit the fuses. There was a spurt of flame, and then another, and another, and a great cloud of black smoke obscured everything. When the smoke cleared, the astonished audience saw that the contraption had lifted straight up into the air, with the blades whirling furiously. A trail of smoke and flame stretched out behind as it flew through the air, and the screams of the pilot could faintly be heard as the thing streaked toward one of the palace towers. The emperor cheered, and the audience applauded madly as it hit the tower and exploded with a great roar, and it was said that pieces of pilot rained down for a week, although that may be a slight exaggeration. The great Chang Heng locked himself in his workroom, and 1 month later he had completed the final design of the most marvelous of all his inventions, the incredible bamboo dragonfly. Li Cao smiled happily. The plans for which I have seen in the Forest of Culture Academy in Hanlin, he said. There was a moment of silence.
You can't possibly mean, Miser Shen whispered.
All right above us is a circle of palm branches that are light, strong, and fan-shaped, said Master Li.
Surely you don't intend to, I said weakly.
A bamboo is all around us, and so is resin. The lava is full of sulfur. There are natural deposits of saltpeter all over China, and probably on this very island. And if a former peasant like Miser Shen can't make a little charcoal, I will be very surprised indeed.
But it would be suicide, I exclaimed.
Insanity, cried Miser Shen.
We will have no hope of survival at all, Master Li agreed. Ox, you get the palm branches and resin and bamboo. The charcoal will be Miser Shen's department, and I will search for saltpeter and extract the sulfur from the lava. I suggest that we hurry, because with every passing moment I grow closer to expiring from old age. For a week a series of explosions shook the little island, followed by the furious screams of Li Cao. His beard was singed and blackened, and his eyebrows were nearly scorched off. So many fires had started in his clothes that he looked as though he had been attacked by a million starving moths. Finally, he found the right formula, and his tubes of fire drug began to behave. Miser Shen and I were rather proud of our handiwork. The basket was woven from reeds, and quite comfortable to sit in, and the palm leaf blades revolved very nicely around the bamboo pole. The bamboo wheel to which the tubes were attached was balanced carefully, and although we had no steering mechanism, we hoped to be able to control our flight by shifting our weight.
Of course, this is madness, I said as I climbed into the basket.
Moronic, said Miser Shen, as he climbed in beside me. We are totally deranged,
Li Cao agreed as he lit the fuses. He hopped into the basket, and I covered my eyes and waited for death. The basket shuddered as the tubes of fire drug began to spurt flames. The wheel started to revolve, and the blades began to whirl round and round. I peeked through my fingers and peered through a cloud of black smoke, and saw that the grass beneath us was bending beneath a blast of wind.
"We are rising!" I yelled.
"We are falling!"
howled Miser Shen. Both of us were right. We had suddenly lifted into the air, and now we were dropping back down. Unfortunately, we had also moved 50 feet to the left, and we were dropping straight toward bubbling lava.
"Lean back!"
Master Li yelled. We shifted our weight, and the bamboo dragonfly suddenly straightened out and began to skim just above the fiery surface toward the other side of the moat, and we stared with horrified eyes at the prints of immense fingers that were eagerly pawing the salt. The hand that no one sees almost got us. A slashing, invisible finger ripped off one of the palm leaf blades, which proved to be a blessing because we had apparently used one too many. As soon as it was gone, our flying machine lifted into the air and began to perform very nicely indeed, except that it was flying around in circles.
Around and around it flew, moving slowly across the ruins of the city, while great lunging marks of furious fingers kicked up clouds of salt beneath us.
"That horrible thing is crawling up on top of the ruins of the palace,"
Miser Shen yelled.
"If it gets on top of the wall, and we keep circling like this, we'll run right into it."
He was right, but nothing could persuade the bamboo dragonfly to change course. Flames and black smoke spurted out behind us, and with one more circle we would be in the clutches of the hand from hell.
"Take off your tunics," Master Li yelled. "Try using them as rudders."
We ripped off our tunics and spread them behind us to catch the wind, and by some miracle it worked. Just as we reached the wall, we suddenly veered to the left, and the hand must have snatched at us because the slabs on top of the wall began to teeter precariously. Then the wall fell apart, and the stones tumbled down into the lake of lava, and then there was an enormous splash that sent fiery molten rock 100 feet into the air. The monster slowly rose to the surface. What had been invisible was now covered with black lava, and we gazed in terror at an enormous hairy hand, perhaps 60 feet long. The palm was up, and the fingers were tightly clenched, and suddenly it jerked convulsively, and the fingers opened. They weren't fingers at all, but the legs of a giant spider, and the heel and palm was a loathsome, bloated sack. A cluster of evil eyes glared up at us, and a hideous round mouth opened and displayed a circle of gigantic, pointed teeth. And then lava poured into the mouth, and the hand that no one sees sank forever beneath the fiery surface of the lake. The bamboo dragonfly flew steadily on, and the tragic shattered city faded behind us. We sat in shaken silence, and finally Li Kao cleared his throat.
"I suspect that it was simply an oversized relative of the common trapdoor spider," he said thoughtfully. "Invisible because before the eruption it had lived underground, where there was no need for sight perception. Nature is astonishingly adaptable, and there are a great many sea creatures that have become transparent to the point of invisibility, and a few insects."
He turned and gazed back as the city dwindled to a tiny speck in an endless expanse of white salt.
"It really is a pity that we couldn't keep the body to study. I would have liked to learn how it managed to eat during the centuries after it devoured the inhabitants of the city, and whether its eyes were atavistic or acquired. A remarkable specimen."
"Nonetheless," said Master Li, "I do not think that we will mourn its passing."